1898, Spain owned Cuba outright. Think about it. Cuba owned by a disorganized parliament over 4,000 miles away. Cubans were in a constant... Cubans were in a constant state of revolt. In 1904, the United States decided to throw a little weight around and, Who is it?
Mr. Pizza Guy.
Again?
Mr. Pizza Guy, sir. Order the double cheese and sausage.
Right here, dude.
Am I hallucinating here? Just what in the hell do you think you are doing?
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Mr. Spicoli, you're on dangerous ground here. You're causing a major disturbance on my time.
I've been thinking about this, Mr. Hand. If I'm here and you're here, doesn't that make it our time? Certainly, there's nothing wrong with a little feast on our time.
You're absolutely right, Mr. Spicoli. It is our time. Yours, mine, and everyone else's in this room. But it is my class. Hamilton, Brandt, Kornfeld, up front. Mr. Spicoli has been kind enough to bring us a snack. Be my guest. Help yourselves. Get a good one.
What is going on, guys? Welcome to another episode of the Movie House Podcast. I'm your host, Brian. I got my co-host, RC.
Hey, everyone. Thank you for listening in to the Movie House. Today's episode is episode four, Fast Times at Ridgemont High. Brian, what have you been up to lately?
So I saw Deadpool and Wolverine. I know that you saw it two times. I only saw it once. And I saw Beetlejuice, which was a very good sequel. And so was Deadpool and Wolverine. It was great as well.
Yes, Deadpool and Wolverine was definitely better than the second one.
Yes.
I also saw Alien Romulus, which was actually pretty good. What else have you been doing outside of movies, Brian?
So I've been doing a lot of streams, been playing Grand Theft Auto a lot. That's Grand Theft Auto 5. That's a fun one. And I've been trying to develop a story for a screenplay. And I've been working on another podcast. And me and RC are going to do the other podcast. It's a TV show podcast. It's going to be fun. So it's going to be great. So other than that, just those things, and that's it.
Sweet. Yeah, I've been playing some games here and there, and then working, of course. I signed up for another Ultimate Frisbee League.
Oh, cool.
So let's get started talking about Fast Times at Ridgemont High. You want to get the talk about the introduction and a little bit about the movie?
Sure. So the movie was... released in 1982. It is an American comedy, teen comedy, and drama. It is rated R. It was originally X-rated, but it was kind of like toned down a little bit. So it was written by Cameron Crowe, who started out writing for Rolling Stone at a young age, and then he wrote a book. And then the book became the movie, which was Fast Times at Ridgemont High. The runtime was 1 hour and 30 minutes, and it was distributed by Universal Pictures. So, RC, you want to talk about the cast?
Yeah, so it does star kind of an interesting cast. Outside of Sean Penn, there's a lot of, in my opinion, some unknown people. But so Sean Penn stars Jeff Spicoli, which kind of just goes throughout the movie as being referred to. His last name is Spicoli. Jennifer Jason Leigh plays Stacy Hamilton. Judge Reinhold plays Brad Hamilton. Robert Romanes plays Mike Damone. Brian Backer plays Mark Ratner, who goes by a nickname The Rat or just Rat. Phoebe Cates played Linda Barrett. Ray Walton plays the teacher, Mr. Hand. Scott Thompson plays Arnold. Vincent plays Mr. Vargas. Amanda Wiss plays Lisa. D.W. Brown plays Ron Johnson. Forrest Whitaker plays Charles Jefferson. Kelly Maroney plays Cindy. Tom Nolan plays Dennis Taylor. And Blair Tefkin plays Pat Bernardo. Brian, why don't you talk about the production of the movie?
So, real quick, can you say Robert Romanus?
Robert Romanus.
We're going to get canceled. I do apologize, guys. No, but seriously. So, the production... All right, so let's get started with that. First-time director Amy Heckerling, this was her first picture, said she was seeking to make a less structured than conventional comedy and more like American Graffiti, so that if you woke up and found yourself living in the movie, that's the kind of feel she wanted. So, according to Brian Backer and Jennifer Jason Lee, her and her family allowed him to stay at their house for no charge till filming wrapped, being that he flew down to star in the film from his hometown of Brooklyn, and he was pretty broke. So, RC, you want to talk about the other ones?
Yeah. So, Nicolas Cage actually played a role in this movie. He lied about his age so he could potentially get a bigger part, but when the producers eventually found out he was 17, it was a much smaller role due to how many hours a 17-year-old could work back then versus 18. And again, it was his first paid role ever. I don't think he actually got credited in the credits, right, Brian?
Well, in his early days, he was known as Nicholas Coppola because he was the nephew of Francis Ford Coppola. So his real name isn't Nicholas Cage. It's more Nicholas Coppola. So there you go. So, yeah. So, again, he tried out for the role of Brad, but they thought that he was too dark. So they ended up giving him another role. So there you go. And there was a deleted scene where he was in, but it was deleted. So his screen time was a little bit cut. But before this, he did a TV show called The Best of Times, and it's bizarre. It's really, really bizarre. But anyway, so go ahead and finish the rest of it.
Yeah, so Universal originally planned to only release the film in the western part of the United States before sending it off to cable services. Did you believe there was no audience and it was going to have poor reception? But after excellent response and reception to the film, it actually went wide across the whole U.S. and had a good long run in the theaters. Near the beginning of the film, Mr. Hand sends Spicoli to the office for being late and passes out the class schedule of quizzes. After the paper is passed out, the students put the page up to their noses and deeply inhale. This was a popular school ritual of the 60s, 70s, and 80s, as photocopying machines were very expensive, so ditto machines were used. The results copies did not get you high, but they smelled good. Interesting. Now I want to smell some old paper.
Yeah.
During the shooting of the film, Sean Penn got so into character that he only answered to the last name Spicoli. In fact, the door on his dressing room was labeled Spicoli instead of his name, Sean Penn. And in the tradition of E.T. and Reese's Pieces, this movie product placed an obscure brand and it became famous. The checkerboard canvas decks Spicoli hammered himself with Vans became a national brand soon after. So Vans the shoes. The mall scenes were shot during the night from when the mall was closed at 9:30 to when it opened at 9. And the two kids who demoan scalps the tickets who are under the age of 18, similar to Nick Cage, and due to labor laws, couldn't film past 13 hours, so they only had until a 10-minute window to shoot their scenes. According to the director, Sean Penn and pals were actually smoking marijuana in the van as they exited for prom. Again, Universal didn't think it would be a hit. The studio had thought about not releasing it again to the East Coast as it would die off quickly. In the novel, Spicoli dreams he's singing Highway to Hell by AC/DC on The Tonight Show, but Johnny Carson refused to do it for the movie, and the other talk shows, including Letterman, turned it down. Apparently, Letterman was willing to do it, but his agent wouldn't let him because of the character doing drugs. And his place was the scene where Spicoli is interviewed by sports announcer Stu Nahan. Ray Rawlson was at the time best known for his role as Uncle Martin on My Favorite Martian in 1963, but unfortunately Rawlson, like many actors of that era, was typecast in that role and couldn't book serious roles until the decade ended. Rawlson said that after the release of this film, he'd been walking down the street and young people would see him and shout, "Mr. Hunt!" Rawlson was grateful for that and it finally meant that he had torn away from being the typecast of Uncle Martin. Brian, why don't you give some more of the production facts?
So this was Forrest Whitaker's first time auditioning for a film, and Amy Heckerling recalls seeing him out of the window after securing the job. He was skipping to his car, she stated. So what's funny is, I worked at a place called the Highway Diner. They sadly closed. And there was a guy, he got out of work and he was skipping to his car because he was happy that work had ended. And I thought that was pretty funny. And he was a weird dude, though. Nicolas Cage appears under the name Nicolas Coppola for the first and only time until 2022's The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent. Oh, okay, so I guess I was wrong earlier. I guess he was known as Nicolas Cage, but this is the only time he appeared as Nicolas Coppola. So anyway, so Stacy works at Perry's Pizza. Jennifer Jason Leigh actually worked at Perry's Pizza for a month after she got the role of Stacy Hamilton, but before filming began. So yeah, there you go. Although Ron Johnson, the cereal salesman, is portrayed as much older than Stacy, actor D.W. Brown is actually only 7 months older than Jennifer Jason Leigh. For those of you that don't know, Jennifer Jason Leigh's father was Vic Morrow. He passed away in 83 due to blades from a helicopter hitting him. So yeah. So the director of The Twilight Zone had to go to court for it. So it was a big old thing. So you want to talk about the plot, RC?
Yeah, overall the plot is very similar to most high school movies. It follows a group of Southern California high school students enjoying their most important subjects, basically sex, drugs, and rock and roll. It has scenes where they sit outside, the girls are talking about boys are talking about girls. It has one of the characters is like a really nervous guy, really wanting to ask a girl out to especially prom. His friend is the cool guy. And then there's Spicoli's surfer kind of character that all he cares about is surfing, and probably also getting high.
Yeah.
and then there is some interesting parts of the plot, but overall it's a decent movie. Brian, do you want to go over the music?
Sure. So, as RC said, the movie is decent, but it's very crude. There's a lot of crude humor. I remember reading, was it an article or something? Or maybe it was I'm trying to think. Maybe it was an interview or something. And Judge Reinhold said that when he was in an airport, a group of men were like, hey, that's the guy that masturbated in a bathroom. And so the cops came over and talked to him because they thought he actually masturbated in the airport bathroom. But they were referring to the movie, which is pretty funny. But yeah, the music. All right. So you have Race on the Radio, performed by the Ravens, written by Bob Fahey. And then you have Somebody's Baby, performed by Jackson Browne, written by Jackson Browne and Danny Korsmar. And so this song, Somebody's Baby, is still played on the radio to this day. So it was a hit. Then you have Love Rules, performed by Don Henley, formerly of the Eagles, written by Don Henley and Danny Korsmar again. And then you have Waffle Stomp, performed by Joe Walsh and written by Joe Walsh. You have Never Surrender, performed by Don Felder, written by Don Felder and Kenny Loggins. And then you have So Much in Love, performed by Timothy B. Schmidt, written by W. Jackson, P. Stages, or Stages, G. Williams, and you have Goodbye, Goodbye, performed by Oingo Boingo, which was written by Danny Elfman, who went on to do movie soundtracks, which he did here. But, you know, he did Batman, Beetlejuice. So, anyway. And he also did Pee-wee's Big Adventure. That was courtesy of A&M Records Incorporated. You want to read the rest, RC?
Yeah, so then our next song in the movie is called Uptown Boys, performed and written by Lewis Goffin and also written by Janet Allen. Fast Times, The Best Years of Our Lives, performed and written by Billy Squire, courtesy of Capitol Records. Sleeping Angel, performed and written by Stevie Nicks, courtesy of Modern Records. Speeding, performed by the Go-Go's, written by Charlotte Caffey and Jane Wielden, courtesy of International Records Syndicate. The Look in Your Eye, performed and written by Gerald McMahon, and also written by Michael Austin. Love is the Reason, performed and written by Graham Nash. Don't Be Lonely by Quarter Flash and written by Marv Ross. I Don't Know, which is the Spicoli theme song, performed by and written by Jimmy Buffett, as well as Mike Utley. The movie title song is Fast Times at Ridgemont High, performed and written by Sammy Hagar. I'll Leave It Up to You, performed by Poco. Moving in Stereo, performed by The Cars. We Got the Beat, also performed by the Go-Go's. Winter of Wonderland, performed by Darlene Love and written by Felix Bernard and Richard B. Smith. American Girl, performed and written by Tom Petty. Life in the Fast Lane, performed by Reeves Nevo and The Cinch. Wooly Bully, written by Domingo Sedmillo, performed by Reeves Nevo and The Cinch again. Kashmir, performed by Led Zeppelin. Strangers in the Night. And then there's a lot of other uncredited songs in the movie. Why don't you talk about the reception, Brian?
So the movie had got mixed reviews upon its release. Some didn't like it, some did, some thought it was funny, some didn't think it was funny. And so, yeah, it got mixed reviews. So there you go. You want to talk? Okay, so what are our closing thoughts, RC?
Let's expand on the reviews a little bit.
Okay, go ahead.
So a little bit more about the reviews. So if you go look at Rotten Tomatoes, 78% of the critics are actually positive and give the film an average rating of 6.7 out of 10. The consensus read, while Fast Times at Ridgemont High features Sean Penn's legendary performance, the film endures because it accurately captured the small details of school, work, and teenage life. Metacritic also assigns a score 61 out of 100 based on 21 critics, giving it generally favorable reviews. On its initial release, like Brian was saying, multiple critics dismissed it as a latest wave of teen exploitation films such as Porky's, The Last American Virgin. Roger Ebert was highly critical of the film's vulgar humor and called it a scuzz pit of a movie. Though he did praise the likes of Lee, Penn, Cates, and Reinhold's performance. And then especially Lee's character is put through a lot of different humiliating situations, especially for a young woman. In later years, he reevaluated and became a big supporter of Cameron Crowe's career. So overall, looks like initially did not get well liked, but as time went on, it became better and better. It did win a couple awards, as it's recognized by the American Film Institute 100 Years, 100 Last as number 87. That was a list in 2000, and it was on the 2005 National Film Registry. What are some other fun facts you have about the movie, Brian?
So, the dog's barking. Can you hear him? Or hear her? Okay. Sorry, guys. The dog is barking. So other than what I told you, most of the production, those were really the most of the fun facts. But I know this movie is a cult classic to this day. And, you know, it was shown on HBO a lot, and people would pause the scene when she's coming out of the pool because it was all, or not pause it. I mean, yeah, people would pause it on the VHS, but people would watch it when it was scrambled just to see Phoebe Cates get out of the pool, which is pretty funny. So, yeah, so here are our closing thoughts on the film. I liked it. I thought it was very funny. It is like Porky's and Animal House and all that. That's what they were trying to go for. Because Animal House was the one that started it all. That's going to be for the next episode. So what did you think of it, RC?
Overall, I think I would probably give the movies kind of like the critics do, like a 6 out of 10. I thought it was funny, but some of the situations definitely made me feel uncomfortable, like the girl getting pregnant, then the guy being a douchebag and not, like, kind of just brushing her off, her getting an abortion, which probably be very, not necessarily frowned upon, but even more controversial nowadays than it was maybe back in the 80s. And so some of those parts were a little interesting. I do like that the one nervous guy continued to go and support her, and again, it was funny. I probably could do out without some of those parts, but I do think the lady performed those situations very well, for given how it came across. I do also think it's funny her older brother has like 3 or 4 jobs in the whole film, and one of his with when he was dressed up as a pirate.
Yeah, that was.
And he was gonna change to deliver the food, but then the manager was like, "No, you have to deliver it dressed up as uniform." And so he's driving, and he pulls up next to a lady, and the lady's just kind of laughing a little bit, and he like
By the way, the lady in the car was married to Cameron Crowe. That is, Nancy Wilson, I think, one of the Wilson sisters from Heart. So there you go. But what the scene I like the most is when that guy was complaining about his food, said it was like cold or something. He ate most of it. And so he's talking to him. He's like, He's like, man, if you don't shut up, I'm going to kick 100% of your ass. I thought that was funny. And they even showed that when I worked at the diner. They even showed that scene. And nobody knew what it was from, so they were just laughing anyways. But in that, in that version, he's like, man, if you don't shut up, I'm going to kick 100% of your... You know, they bleep it.
Yeah.
It's funny. But yeah, that scene was funny. And then... Yeah, there was so many funny scenes in this movie. I really enjoyed it. So, great film. You can watch it over on Amazon Prime. And it's available on DVD, Blu-ray, and all that. Very funny film. So, yeah. So, here's our conclusion. So, here's a quick wrap-up. So, any plans for the rest of the weekend, RC?
Nope. Might go take the little one shopping. And might see my sister and her family a little bit.
That's cool.
Yeah, how about your plans for the weekend and next week?
So tomorrow is bowling. Next week I'm going to karaoke. CJ's not going to be there. It's going to be Mom. No, not Mark. Greg, he's doing it next week. So I'm excited to see how he does it. And Josh said he has better speakers and better microphones, so we'll see. But I'm excited for that. And then I work Tuesday and Friday. So after Friday, after I get off work, I'm going over to Karen George's place and we're going to go to karaoke. And I'm streaming Thursday instead of Friday. So I usually stream Monday, Tuesday, Friday, and Saturdays. But there you go. Yeah, so that's what I'm doing next week. And tomorrow, like I said, is bowling, so I'm going to go over to Carrie and George's place. And then me and Carrie are going to walk over to bowling, so it should be fun.
What's our next episode going to be on?
So we're going to, so as I mentioned a little bit ago, we're going to talk about the 1978 film Animal House. That's going to be the movie that started it all. So yeah, there you go.
Sounds good. Until next time, Brian. Have a good one.
All right. You too. Bye.
Bye.